Hello, 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 ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another episode of the David Friend Show. I'm your host, Nicholas Lorimer, and today we are coming to you live for the first time, I think, ever, at least live on YouTube. If you're listening to us on podcast streaming platforms or on the Cliff Central, you will be hearing us a little bit later, but this is a little bit experimental from our end, and so I apologize if you hear any strange noises, if anyone runs through the background without clothes on or anything like that. This is live, unedited, raw footage. So today, of course, I am your host, Nicholas Lorimer, as I usually am, and I'm joined by Mr. Gabriel Krauser. Gabriel, how are you?
Good, Nick. What an exciting time to be live. While history is, the paint is wet and a new story is being written.
Yes. And sorry, I have muted you because I did hear echo from your microphone, but we are joined by the lovely and talented Ms. Sara Gong, who is here to dispense her wisdom. Sara, how are you today?
Hopefully I'm not echoing. Sorry. Particularly being live. But live actually is a sort of sensitive word in the current climes, but yes, live and well.
Excellent. Keen watchers of the show may know that we did have a live show once, but it was not planned, and it was good fun.
The less we say about that, the better.
Indeed. All right. So, of course, what are we going to talk about today? But the thing that's still dominating the country. I thought when we had the whole crisis with whether Zuma was going to go to jail last week that we'd had our constitutional crisis at least for the month. But we seem to be having our great nationwide crisis, a second one in the space of a week, and that is, of course, the rampant looting, chaos, protests, destruction, and violence that's going on across South Africa still today. So we were just all talking beforehand. We don't have a particularly good sense of how widespread it still is today. We know that in KZN there is still a lot of looting, violence, chaos, that sort of stuff. But I'm not sure how much of that is continuing outside of KZN. So let's start off, before we get into all the details of that, let's start off by talking about President Ramaphosa's address last night. So Ramaphosa spoke to the nation and, well, he said a lot of things that were good. He said that we needed to protect private property, that we mustn't take the law into our own hands, but people must also help the police. And there was a good acknowledgement of the role that civilians have played in defending lives, property, and the rule of law, which was, I think, quite unexpected from him, even if it was fairly soft. But ultimately, it was a bit sort of, yeah. So, Gabriel, am I right in characterizing it like that? Am I being too harsh, too good on him? What do you think about Ramaphosa's speech last night?
Everything in context. I think if you compare his speech last night to the speech on Sunday night, you'd be very impressed. You'd say, what a wonderful thing to see a leader who's actually using multiple stern words against those terrorists who are trying to turn the country into ash. I think if you compare Ramaphosa's speeches and actions to the sort of standard that you'd want to hold a president to in a constitutional democracy, I think you'll find him wanting. The deployment of the army is somewhat welcome. It's somewhat hard to tell what the effect of that is, whether there's capacity, whether there's expertise. I think the main issue, and this is a common one, is that in terms of words, the main thing that Ramaphosa was missing was an acknowledgement of his own role and his government's role in leading us to this crisis. And people might think that's quixotic, but international examples bear out the possibility of leaders saying, look, we see that we've screwed up badly, but we're going ahead on a much better basis with that in mind. In times of war, there's a huge impulse to say, no, we've won every battle and victory's around the corner. But the really good leaders say, look, we've lost. We didn't have the right ideas. We figured that out. We're not going to do it again. And this is why we're going to win, and it's going to take a while. What are the right ideas? What are the things that Ramaphosa should have acknowledged? Firstly, the presidency's and the ruling party's role in injecting this idea that property is something not worth respecting.
Right.
Doing so with policies like expropriation without compensation, talking up prescribed assets, pushing through nationalization of healthcare, locking the economy down as if no one's ever died of poverty, talking about lives versus livelihoods as if losing money has never resulted in loss of life. All of these things have sort of inculcated further the premise that property is theft, and so anyone who has something is already a thief and you might as well steal from them. And that's how Karl Marx has put it. We're just seeing variations on that theme. The second side is, of course, the race nationalism. What does the A in ANC stand for? Does it stand for African, as Thabo Mbeki had it 2 decades ago, someone who resides in the continent, regardless of what gene pool they come from? No. African has come to mean what gene pool you come from, and it excludes many South Africans. This name, title, level of ethno-nationalism in the ANC has filtered through into multiple speeches, policy moves, personnel rearrangements, and so forth. That emboldens ethno-nationalism of all sorts. You combine a communist push to steal everything. Of course, communism's, you read the ANC Umrabula document of last year, they said, yeah, the problem is there are too many people stealing one or two things. We need to steal everything. That's what real communism is. And Jake and Cyril Ramaphosa said, we have, you know, there's not enough influence from the SACP. He said that only a couple of weeks ago. So you combine. No. I'll just finish by saying this. John Kane Berman, emeritus professor of race relations and former CEO of the Institute, wrote a grand book that everyone should read called Between Two Fires. His thesis being that we, as South Africans, have for the last century since the beginning of this country sat between two fires. One, an ultra-left disrespect for property rights. The other, a sort of hard-nosed ethno-nationalist tribalist thing, and there have been various tribes to fill that space. And the problem with those fires is that they both grow, they become indistinguishable. And where I was sitting last night watching looters and police drive by in the CBD, I couldn't tell one from the other. I could just see chaos.
Very poetically put. Sarah, do you have anything to add to that description of the president's speech?
Well, I thought of it in these terms. I described this to my son this morning. If cliches were wallpaper, I'd have redecorated my TV room. And that's the problem with – there weren't any cliches, which is Ramaphosa's stock in trade, but he repeated them. And, of course, the problem is that – agree absolutely with Gabriel. There was no acknowledgement of fault, which – you know, so you know that the public knows they're lying if they don't acknowledge they're at fault. If they're trying to blame everyone else and not mention themselves, you know they're lying. That is the one thing. And the other thing is it had very much the feel of him reading a teleprompter. And you wanted to actually have the sense that he, even if it imperfectly, he was speaking from the heart. The other thought, and it's really just thoughts, but I think that, you know, it's one of those cases of there may be an opportunity coming out of chaos. Is one of these things, again, what Gabriel referred to, is the fact that the sight of this many people being deprived of their property in one way or the other, whether it's burning down a shop or stealing from it, et cetera, the consequences of it may have a salutary effect on the expropriation issue. The other issue, of course, is the Firearms Control Act, Amendment Act. And right. The desire to disarm the citizenry. I mean, if we disarm the citizenry, the police would be in a lot of trouble.
Yeah,
as well.
Save the police, arm the citizens.
Exactly. So, I mean, look, in the plush areas, like where I live in the northern suburbs, you know, shopping centres have closed out of fear and concern. Not necessarily that there will be problems, but they're not prepared to take the chance. And I think the effects on the people who are involved in the looting, when shopping centers are gone, shops are gone, access to goods and services are not available, it's going to be very, very sobering. But one young woman I spoke to top this morning said to me, young black woman, said, she thought this might be a turning point in the ANC's running of the country. So it's bringing out a whole lot of really interesting things that has the potential to turn the ANC's narrative upside down.
Yeah, I think one of the somewhat heartwarming things is seeing a sort of broad multiracial disgust with the lawlessness. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I think it's people taking it too far. I saw an inflammatory video of people, you know, being chased with sticks or something, and someone who is filming it, who is, I think, from the sounds of her voice, also a young black woman, cheering on the people chasing the dudes with sticks. I think a lot of South Africans, we really all suffer, all South Africans suffer under lawlessness and chaos and violence. And for a lot of people, seeing acts of vigilantism, even ones that go too far, sort of darkly cathartic. So I think you can read that in both a good way and a bad way. But Gabriel, what's your sense of what's going on now? Do you agree with my analysis that it seems to mostly be focused in KZN today? Do you know what's going on in Joburg? Anything you've heard about looting, rioting, that kind of stuff?
Yeah, it's hard to know. It does seem like some of the Joburg stories from yesterday, Eusebius Makhayza tweeting about sort of running for his life from Benmore Shopping Center, and four ways being looted, that those were slightly panicked communiques, and that what in fact happened is that, as Sara said, plush shopping centers shut down before anything could go wrong. My own experience in Yeovil last night is worth reporting. It was the ShopRite liquor store being attacked. I lost count at about 20 shots fired, but the liquor store was held by a combination of the police and locals, and it's a very rare victory, I suppose. Mm. So well done. I bring that up because word on the street is that people will be returning in numbers shortly. We'll see about that, to that particular location. We have heard reports. I mean, yesterday, so many shopping centers in Soweto were completely ransacked. We've heard that some of that is ongoing.
And Alex too.
Yeah, ranging all the way from Orange Farm, sort of on the south end, to Dobsonville on the north. I think that it's worth bearing in mind a couple of economic points to be aware of. One is something that was actually raised by the French economist whose name is slipping my mind right now, who in the 19th century discovered the concept of opportunity cost. And his story went very simply like this. You're sitting in a little French village and someone comes along and throws a brick through the window of the baker's shop, and or the child accidentally slips and breaks the window. And the baker's a bit glum, and then his friend comes by and he says, "Don't worry, you're creating work, because you're going to have to hire someone to come and fix the window." I mean, how else would the window guys get work? And I think this old French economist was tapping into a French line, which is that ceramics are made to break. This is the kind of thing that French people say when you break something. Okay, this prompted a thought. Well, how does it work? And the modern equivalent, which is very serious, and I have been hearing on radio, is, okay, but insurance will pay out, right? And it's, you know, people will be hired to come and clean up and rebuild all of the things, get the shopping malls going again, restock them. Opportunity costs, the billions that have already been estimated to have been damaged, are going to come out of the pockets of businesses whose premiums are going to have to go up because the insurance company's reserves have been depleted. The money that they're spending on rebuilding what they already had could have been put into expanding, getting new shops.
Exactly.
This is called opportunity cost. It's the stuff that goes wrong that you can't see. So you can see the thing get broken, you can see it getting fixed, but what you can't see is what can't happen because now this has happened. Add that to the supply chain disruptions. I have spoken to people in Soweto today who say they already can't get food. They literally just can't find a place to buy food. That, I think, is one of the more important reasons to suspect that the trouble has not stopped. Another reason to suspect that the trouble has not stopped is that the 2019, 2017, 2015, 2008 xenophobic riots, all of those continued for at least 10 days and often as much as 3 weeks. the sort of ebb and flow is a matter in part of chemistry. How much liquor can you handle? How long does it take to sleep off that and the adrenaline of burning someone's property down or threatening someone's right. life, killing someone, or maybe being killed? Once you sleep it off, you get going again. Those moves, I think, will continue to play out, but I'd be very happy to be wrong. Right, to the no, short answer to that is it does seem like we're in a little bit of a lull. Perhaps the quiet before the storm breaks.
Yeah, I think the cold and counting, which anyone who's up here is currently suffering from, really is probably putting a dampener on things, because it's just much harder to get hot under the collar when it's freezing cold outside. And I mean that quite seriously. What I've been interested in, though, is so obviously there has been instances of very much violence, very much anger, nastiness, and that kind of thing, although that seems to mostly be in KZN. In a lot of places, there's been this very curious sort of relaxed free-for-all when it comes to looting. There were scenes of this from Jabulani Mall. There were some from Peter Maritzburg, where there were some amazing news pieces of news footage of a guy trying to fit a massive, massive TV, 58-inch kind of thing, into his clapped-out Toyota Taz. And it's in the background of the news broadcast, and it's just, he can't fit it in through the door, so he tries to put it in the boot, and it's so hilarious, because he's also
kind
of...
he has to take out the other stuff that he's looted from the boot.
He has to take out the cool drinks.
Put that in the back seat, then put the TV in the boot. It takes him a while. It's a slow business.
And eventually, and it's even funnier because he's slightly portly, and he's not like a super young guy either. You know, he's not like some fiery youth. He's just someone who thought, well,
making
I might as well help myself. My mom was watching, I think, ENCA or Newsroom Africa, and was amused to see a sort of portly middle-aged woman coming out of the shopping center with bags full of looted stuff and then waiting on the road outside for an Uber. There's some videos of people walking around the shopping center complaining about the looting while it's being looted. So anyway, it's very strange. Sarah, what do you think?
In fact, what I was going to do in response was actually point to the dark humor that South Africans are very good at. And I agree. I think that in some respects, the looting had a festival atmosphere. In that respect, it wasn't the... it wasn't part of the sort of organized chaos. But, there's no doubt. I mean, the young guy walking down the street with a sofa on his head, the two guys driving out of a warehouse with forklift trucks. And I thought, well, once their batteries have gone, they're going to have to carry this stuff the rest of the way home. And then there was the group, and this is really, was funny in the South African context. The incidents itself weren't funny, but watching Indian shopkeepers, whether they be Hindu or Muslim, sort of getting ready to confront the crowd, and I thought that the crowd really should turn around and go back the other way, because these guys were really, really wuss. So it's a dreadfully fraught scene, but at the same time, it feeds into the sort of South African human narrative, which is probably just as well, because if you can't laugh about it, we'll all just weep in our coffee.
Now, I agree with that completely. One has to sort of keep one's chin up while this total chaos is going on, because otherwise it's too terrible to comprehend. But we have seen some truly weird things. I saw a video, which was definitely from yesterday, of a group of Muslim men with the police. And they had basically formed a block of a couple hundred people to support the police in clearing a road. But they were shouting, you know, sort of, Allahu Akbar before they decided to charge with the police towards the people blocking the roads.
Well, that would have scared the crap out of me, I must tell you.
Yeah, we're living in a very strange country, I think. I think, I can't remember, someone said it to me that what we are really seeing now is that the middle classes do have some, the middle class, I guess, in the very broad sense of the term, do have teeth. The government has been pushing them around for a very long time, and now we're kind of seeing the middle class stepping into the gap left by the failure of the army and the police.
And can I in fact just say to that, there's a tendency always to talk about the middle class as a sort of petty bourgeoisie, but the middle class is damn hard working and usually has to sacrifice quite a lot to get where they
get. Yeah, and includes a lot of tradespeople and quite sort of down to earth, you know, tough people, not just people sitting sipping coffee in Sandton.
So if I can just step in on that, I think that it is the case that people have been a lot of people across KZN and Gauteng have been doing what they can, in Northwest and some other places, to protect their businesses, to protect their residences, and to protect their neighbors. And this neighborly thing is very important, but it's not enough. If you look at the supply chain disruption that's happening now, which is so likely to lead to real food crisis, a real food insecurity, this idea of people, of this is a poverty, you know, in part, poverty is an explainer of why we're seeing the disrespect for property rights that we're seeing. But these are not food riots at all. These are TV riots. Mm. Food riots are still to come unless we address these issues. And retail is the sharp end of it where people are currently defending themselves. And that's very nice to see. Be much better to see the police step in with that. But it does seem like some people can hold their own ground. Then there's wholesale. And the bigger centers, some of them being looted, some of them not, those need to be protected and protected presumably from larger mobs. Then there's the supply lines, right? Mm-hmm. The highways. And it's very difficult for private citizens to defend the N3 route, the other major routes that milk needs to go down to get to the distribution centers.
That's a really big problem, I think.
There is just, we are not going to be able to hold this as private citizens. The government has to step in and secure the major logistical arteries of this country. And then you get to source of food. It is every time I've seen, I don't know, maybe I'm a bit hardened from my time in rural South Africa, but when there's political protests, burning down farmland, hay stacks and the like, often follows shortly. And we have had some reports of that coming out of KZN. And I certainly worry that there's more of that. And you need protection on that end too, because it takes all four steps to maintain food security: the source, the logistics, the wholesale, and the retail. And right now, I think that people are focused on the retail, and so they should be. Those shops have all been emptied. How are they going to get refilled? Well, you need to look at the other three, and we absolutely need a serious, credible, and very disciplined show of force in order to secure those units. And that's not even to touch on infrastructure and other things that I frankly think we shouldn't talk about too much.
Yeah, exactly. Right, so let's talk about what we think the political echoes of this are going to be. I'm taking off that comment that that person you were talking to, Sara. I think this really does have a potential to hurt the ANC in a number of ways. One of them is that there's a, you know, we often talk about the conservative South Africans, the middle of the road conservative South Africans who are found in across racial lines, who are very attached to law and order. And I think a lot of those people have either not voted against the ANC or voted for the ANC because they believed that it was a sort of respectable and moral institution that would defend law. And that is not even, you can't even keep up the pretense of that anymore. That's just completely gone now. There's also people who are just going to be fed up and disgusted by this. The fact that the cops and the army have been caught so completely unprepared and unable to deal with this. I also think that it's going to hurt the ANC because the ANC benefits a lot from the perception that it's strong, that it's powerful. You often see ANC supporters say the ANC will be in power forever. The ANC is strong. The ANC is big. This makes them look very weak and small indeed.
Can I just say one comment exactly in respect of that? In a better managed society, police intelligence of what was happening around Nkandla and as a consequence of Nkandla should have been accessible and available to trained people. I mean, in other words, if you've got reasonable police intelligence, that's where you're going to you avoid just reacting to a situation and anticipate things going wrong. And the ANC alone is responsible for the decimation of those skills. So it feeds into exactly the point you're making about the party seeming weaker.
Yeah, I mean, last week, Monday, I was talking with Michael Morris, our colleague, And he said, "Where, if there's trouble, where do you think it's going to be?" I said, "Between Durban and Pietermaritzburg, Mooi River Plaza, and in Joburg, it's going to come out of Jewell Street." I'm not very clever. The Fine. Fact that the intelligence services couldn't figure that one out 3 days after the fact is redonkulous. I think in terms of the political fallout, I want to go back to my opening remarks that South Africa has lived ideologically between two fires, sort of a kind of propertyist theft socialism on the left and a kind of tribalist ethno-nationalism on the right. This sounds like theory, right? Okay, so Premier Sihle Zikalala was one of those ANC members who insisted on continuing to talk about white monopoly capital even after some members of the party had resisted that. And Paul Mabe now says that we must congratulate Mr. Zikalala for sowing unity and a harmonious sort of non-tribalist attitudes in KZN. So, okay, on the talk level, the ANC is rubbish. What about the walk the walk? It is a meme that's been going around WhatsApp, and it's also a fact. The highest form of respect is emulation. You are, at some level, seeing people emulate what they take the ANC to be, a party of looters. Jacob Zuma looted in a sophisticated fashion. He had allies that were sophisticated. Tom Moyane, Sean Abrams, go down the list. Now there's a bit of trouble, so you celebrate the looter by looting the country. And I think that that demonstration of ideology in practice, first at the level of Pretoria and then at the level of townships across KZN and Gauteng, I think that does get under the skin of decent South Africans. And put this silliness to the side of who looks how and how to judge people on that basis. I think people are seeing character play out in an ugly way. I worry a little bit about those looters who do get a nice TV. I worry about them getting away with it, putting it up in their room, and then their neighbors at some stage feeling a bit jealous. He got something for nothing. But I think that the overwhelming reaction is indignant. This gets under my skin, and I think I'm not alone. I think that's bad news for the ANC.
I think it's very much a case of, you know, if you're going to criticize me for looting KZN, do not talk to me about it. You've got nothing or nowhere to come from.
I think we really are seeing all the chickens come home to roost for the ANC right now. And if they were going to time it, this is possibly one of the worst times it could come, considering we've got election coming up in October. Assuming they don't postpone it for COVID reasons, I'm a little bit skeptical that they're not going to maybe try and pull a fast one on this one and say, no, we'll do it with the national elections in 2024, in which case that is the next crisis that we're going to face after this one calms down. And I think this one will calm down. I think we said that on the show yesterday. But like Gabriel said, you know, we might be in for a couple of weeks of badness.
The things to look out for are genuine food insecurity. And the other thing to look out for is the more victims get tallied up on the sort of on the Zuma faction side. If more people get killed by police, more people get killed by people of the wrong color. Julius Malema I've been seeing comments coming out of the EFF who said they'll join once the army gets involved on the side against the army, trying to racialize some of the citizens' defense. I think that we'll be quite lucky, frankly, if this thing calms down consistently from here. I see a roller coaster that has little ups and downs, but something that's far from over.
Here's a thought. The chickens may not come home to roost because I think they've been stolen for a start. And I've heard, but I haven't been able to check, somebody stole a shark from the Durban Aquarium. Now, what they are going to do with a gasping shark, I have no idea, but it sure raises some level of interest of a different kind.
I think so. Anyway, I see there are many interesting comments, which we don't have time to properly deal with now, so I'm just going to deal with a fun one. Charlie Brown asks, if he gives 1,000 rand to the show, will he get a small clipping of Gabriel's beard? I'm not able to answer that question. But we'll get back to you maybe the next time Gabriel's on.
Let's survive the crisis and see what comes next.
Yes. Anyway, thank you for joining us on this experimental live show. We'll be live again tomorrow at the Daily Friend, although I think we're going to be earlier in the morning, somewhere around 11, somewhere around there. Anyway, we hope you enjoyed. Please like, subscribe, comment. Please support the IRI. You can SMS your name to that number back there behind me. And have a wonderful day, and I hope that everyone and their family and friends and all that stay safe. Cheers.